1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed the first hour, we were joined by Charlie Huddy, assistant coach of the Winnipeg Jets. We were joined by Chris Mason, goaltender of the Winnipeg Jets. In case you missed any of the programs so far, it will be available for download on iTunes tomorrow. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe to it and get it sent to you each and every week.
You know, Drew, Tim, you know, played Iron Maiden, Aces High, right before Chris Mason came on. Chris always plays, Tim always plays awesome music. He just played Green Day. I like that album. Did you know that Green Day once played at the Royal Albert years before they were popular?
I didn't.
Royal Albert.
Okay.
It's neat because it's a small venue. And a lot of bands, it's actually closed down right now, but a lot of bands actually, you know, played there before they became popular. And I just thought I'd, you know, ask you guys if you knew that, specifically you, because I know you're a music connoisseur.
Yeah, I'm not a music connoisseur. So, okay, so good to know. I now know one more thing than I knew earlier, so I appreciate that. Welcome back to the program. As I was saying, you can follow us on Twitter. Search for Illegal Curve on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Let's go and do some NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
It's been a while since we heard that audio, so it's nice to have it back. Let's start with, I guess, free agent Chris Drury retired after 12 years in the NHL. He had been bought out by the New York Rangers in this offseason. You know, what's Drury's legacy in your mind? And is it anything besides being a Little League World Series champion?
No, he went from being, you know, underrated to overrated in his career. He went from being underrated with Colorado to being overrated because of the clutch goals, quote-unquote, that he always scored. But he was in a position to score those goals. Overall, he was a really good, you know, second-line forward, maybe fringe first-line forward at times with Buffalo. He was a first-line forward. He's a second-line forward who benefited greatly from playing with the likes of Peter Forsberg. Didn't seem to be the guy when he was in Calgary or in New York and really relied on to be the man. That didn't seem to be, you know, his MO. But when he was relied on to be a second scorer and a top, he's clearly a top six player, relied upon to be a top goal scorer, or, you know, a second-line goal scorer, maybe fringe first-line guy, and not the man, he was terrific. And he scored big goals, obviously, whether it be in Colorado or Buffalo. But you have to be given opportunity to do so. I thought he was a very, very, very good NHL career. Heart and soul guy, block shots, get in the way, you do everything. You know, he did a lot with the size that he had, and I thought he had a very, very, very admirable career. I mean, certainly not a Hall of Famer, but certainly somebody you refer to later on down the road as being a guy, you know, who was relevant.
Yeah, Richie, some people were shocked that he retired.
Andrew Gross basically told us his knee was done.
Yeah,
his knees were done.
And the thing is, when you consider that his knees were that bad and his play deteriorated so much, especially, you know, when he was acquired by New York, but I'm going to remember him for, you know, his great career and not so much the fact that he got paid so much money. The contract was horrible. I mean, you can't...
It's not his fault.
You can't deny it, but exactly, it's not his fault.
Hell, I take advantage of Glenn Sather if I could.
I remember him coming in as a rookie and winning the Stanley Cup in 96.
Yep.
So
no, 2002, I thought it was.
Oh,
2001. Was he playing 96? I don't think he played.
He wasn't on the 96.
Okay, maybe I'm going back a little bit far. I'm getting a little excited. 2001, with Hayduke and all that.
Yeah.
But he great two-way player and a good leader and played very well in Buffalo. And then him and Briere were, you know, the most sought-after free agents in that class.
Yeah.
Both over. So I'm going to remember his winning more so than his struggles in New York. I mean, a lot of people are focusing on that now, and I think that's a little bit unfair when you consider, you know, his injury troubles. He can't control that. So yeah, had a great career, and you know, if he put up a few more good years, who knows if he would still be playing? But it came down to his knees.
Yeah, his knees just lost him. You know, good career. Move on. Let's move on. Jonas Hiller of the Anaheim Ducks has apparently returned to the team, and he's free of all symptoms of vertigo. How, with a healthy Jonas Hiller, what is the Ducks' ceiling?
Would it beat Nashville?
Would have beat Nashville?
Oh, yeah, it would be Nashville. Oh, yeah. Better team
so
than Nashville.
So they lost in the first round because Jonas Hiller wasn't there.
He's a top five goalie. I mean, he's as good as you're going to get if he's healthy. You know, you have a top six. If Slaney comes back, pretty dangerous. The defense, well, patchwork, they really kind of people on the fly, and obviously the gift of Cam Fowler, right, I believe number 12, two summers ago, was beneficial. You know, was there ceiling with a hot goalie? You never know what your ceiling is, but, you know, that especially a hot goalie with the talent of Jonas Hiller. I mean, they could be, I mean, they would have been a second-round team this year. I don't think they're in the class of L.A., Chicago, Vancouver, Detroit, and San Jose, but they're probably in the 6th, 7th, 8th slot, and they're certainly capable of upsetting those teams, especially with a big line like Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan and a hot goalie. So I think their upside is kind of a second round team, but that's nothing to scoff at.
I think they're a third round team. I think with a healthy Hiller.
Rank your top eight in the Western Conference. We don't talk about the Western Conference this year as much because for some reason we're in the Eastern Conference.
You're going to give away our season preview show, Drew.
You know, you know what, Drew? Not yet.
Okay, fine.
It's too early. It's August 22nd.
Sorry.
You know, we're back on the air when? September 10th? Maybe we'll start talking about rankings then. Maybe a little bit later.
Well, so, so he's a...
I would say maybe five is the ceiling for Anaheim. I think a lot hinges on Solani, but Hiller is...
Do you think Solani's coming back?
Yeah.
Do you think he's coming back?
Yeah.
Is he just... What's he waiting for at this point if he is coming back?
Make sure his knee's okay to go. I mean...
Well, I mean, if he's going to come back, he's got to announce it sometime in the next 2 weeks, probably.
Why? They're up against the cap.
I'm not saying about cap, but, for training camp purposes and everything else.
Training camp.
Okay, 3 weeks. He has to announce it sometime in the next 3 weeks. So his knee's not going to make a difference between now and 3 weeks from now.
Let's get this straight, though. Anaheim, I see your point. But Anaheim will wait as long as it takes. Oh. Timo Solani is the franchise there.
Well, can Anaheim afford to wait as long? So, say they wait for Timo and they expect that he's going to announce he's coming back in 3 weeks. And his knee flares up and he's not back. Is the team not put at a disadvantage as a result of that?
Well, let's put it this way. There's nobody out there that's going to replace Timo Solani, right. So I don't think that matters.
But they could have done something along
Hunter's
those lines.
Trent Hunter's name's been mentioned. Trent Hunter's not anywhere near an 80-point player.
No, nobody expects Trent Hunter to replace Timo Solani, but they could have maybe addressed it a little bit more earlier on in the offseason had they known what Timo was going to do or not do.
Drew, I think they're preparing for Timo Solani maybe not playing the first month. That's worst-case scenario. That they're already preparing for that. I don't know. I mean, they're waiting. I mean, I don't think that they're going to put any type of pressure on Solani to make a decision. I really don't think so.
Subtle signs would lead you to believe that them having not replaced him would mean that he's coming back.
Okay, so you're thinking the silence is golden in this case.
By the way, I do think he'll be back for the start of the regular season.
Then why did you just say they're waiting for him to wait a month?
No, I said that they aren't putting any pressure for him to make a decision. It has nothing to do with whether or not I believe that he'll be back.
He personally believes he'll be back.
I believe that he'll be back for the start of the season. I didn't say training camp.
Okay.
Season.
Matt Bradley, ex of the Washington Capitals, says that former teammate Alex Semin doesn't care. Do you think he's right?
He would know better than I would. I mean, his offensive production is pretty irreplaceable. So while he might not care, it's he's certainly... less replaceable. He's irreplaceable as compared to Matt Bradley, who you can pick another Matt Bradley on the street. But I do understand the point in that he's in the dressing room. He sees if a guy cares. Alexander Semin is a top goal scorer. Probably already maxed out his prime, but he's a top goal scorer. But maybe he could have been a 55-60 goal scorer, if he had been, his heart had been more into it, or would be more into it. Maybe. So just because he's a great player the defenders of Semin will say he's a great player anyways. Well, sure, maybe he could have been a better player. On the other hand, I mean, for all that he doesn't care, he still produces. So you can go both ways on it, and he would know better than we would. He's in the dressing room. It's hard to tell when you're not in the room like that.
You know, Matt Bradley, Drew, really quickly here. He's a hardworking, rugged player. That's what you describe Matt Bradley as. But it's not just Matt Bradley that's saying this. Unfortunately, Alexander Semin, big fan of his, all the talent in the world, but he is quickly gained a reputation of being, the next Alexei Kovalev as far as his ability to pick and choose when he wants to score. I mean, Semin went through a big drought last year in Washington, and that was correlated with their slump. And, some nights he'll score 4 points, and, for 2 weeks he'll do nothing. So, whether it's Matt Bradley or whatever, it's a concern for the Capitals and whoever, because, it's having a one-dimensional player only goes so far in the NHL. You have to be really, really good to be a one-dimensional player. And you look at a guy like Ilya Kovalchuk, he's not a one-dimensional player. He was, and you can make an argument maybe actually last year you could make the argument that he was a little one-dimensional. But
if you're going to be one-dimensional, you better be a goal scorer.
That's a good dimension to have.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip number 5. I hope to come back to it later on the show. Number 6, Ethan Morrow signs a one-year contract with the LA Kings. Yeah. 1 year, $600,000.
Fourth line left wing. Fourth line left wing. Depth signing. Maybe kill some penalties. He's awful at even strength. A veteran guy on the team that wants to make a run. Just depth signing. But he's not going to be very much consequence. His time, I mean, he's been past his prime for more than a few years now.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually missed one. We'll get it to it at the end of the Travis Ajak injury.
That's a significant one.
Well, we'll come back to that at 7:45. We've got some time scheduled then. So let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, Illegal Curve's scouting correspondent Kyle Kozier is going to join us to talk some Winnipeg Jets prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Shortly after 7:15 in the evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to be joined on the line by Kyle Kozier. He's the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show line.
Kyle, good evening. How are you, buddy?
Hey, very well. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, thank
good,
you.
Kyle.
You know, we want to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about the article you wrote for IllegalCurve.com, where you went through your top 10 Winnipeg Jets prospects. But you sort of took it from a different angle. You said some of the top 10 guys that jumped out at you, which might not necessarily be that what everybody else is talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess what I was doing is I was picking the guys that are, 23 years of age or younger, they don't have a lot of pro experience, and basically saying these are the guys that I'm really going to kind of keep a closer eye on this winter. You know, some of the other guys that were left off, Ben Maxwell is one, and Arthur Skolda, just guys that have been around, around the lower minor leagues and whatnot for a while and have some experience, but I mean, it's kind of been done to death, so... just because these guys are just making their way into pro hockey, I thought I'd pay a little closer attention to these fellas.
Well, let's start with the number one guy on your list, and that's, of course, the first-round draft pick from this most recent draft. That's Mark Scheifele. How quickly do you expect to see Scheifele in a Winnipeg Jets uniform?
I think it would be, tell you the truth, I'm looking, when he's about 21 or 22, and the only reason I say that is he's just really starting to hit his stride right now. So, I mean, that sort of guess, I suppose, could change if he really kind of takes the OHL by the lapels and shakes it up a little bit this year. But he did really well internationally in the last little while here, and it helped him assume maybe a bit bigger role on the grander stage of the OHL rather this year. It might be sooner rather than later, but the fact of the matter is there's really no need to rush him just yet.
How do you get
him? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's right. I was going to say, if you're a fan and you kind of hear about his performance at the World Junior Camp being, pretty effective in practice, but not that effective in games, do you worry at all, or is that reading into a very, very, very small sample size at a midsummer event?
Again, it's a midsummer event. You're not 100% sure where these guys are at in terms of training and whatnot. You hope they're really, going at it pretty hard. But again, when you're on the ice and at a really high level, too, some guys are, it's the game as a whole, you can have good days or bad days, and again, if just a short camp, if you're not on your game and you don't look great in the practices, I mean, it's not the end of the world because there's a myriad of guys that have come before him and have gone on to have good careers that really were said to have not looked good at the World Juniors. Guys were cut at the World Juniors that have gone on to become good players too. So I don't think that's a big deal. I think if you come back in January, February, and say, boy, he's not really doing much then, maybe cause for concern, but at this point, I think it's not a big deal.
Kyle, speaking about the article you wrote and the list that you compiled, the top 10 prospects for the Winnipeg Jets, a guy that I feel hasn't been talked about enough, or maybe is a guy that people aren't considering as a guy who can, have a real offensive impact as well as maybe even defensively, is Patrice Cormier, who you ranked number 5. This is a guy that was a captain of Team Canada at the World Junior Championships a few years ago. He's 21 years old. Obviously, people know about maybe some of the negative things that were associated with Cormier. But what can you tell us maybe about Cormier, a guy who had a lot of success in the Q, and maybe what you think his ceiling is maybe this year and, moving forward?
Well, I guess it's a good question, and I really see him at this stage of the game as a guy that, if he wants to play in the NHL right now, he might not be able to just jump right in and put up big numbers. That said, he has enough sandpaper to his game, and he's really one of those guys who drives other players nuts because, what I wrote in there is you really don't know what he's going to do when he gets out there. So other players, it's like sort of like a Matt Cook type. He's not like that, but if you're an opposing player, you've got to watch what that guy's doing on the ice when he's out there, because you can get an elbow, you get a stick in the face, get you from behind, you don't know. So you really got to be aware. So I think Cormier's got to, like I wrote in the article yesterday, like, you know, find the line, put toes over it, and play right on the edge the whole time. So I think that is his, the quickest way for him to get to the NHL. When he gets there and gets himself established, you hope that the offense that he has in his game will find its way to the forefront. But he might be one of those guys that takes a few years before the goals start to come. But that said, I wouldn't be surprised to see him playing with the Jets sooner rather than later here, just because of the fact that those agitator types are so valuable.
You know, Kyle, we mentioned Richie's article, and Richie was mentioning that the Jets really could use a guy to help them out on the penalty kill. Do you know enough about Cormier's junior career? Is he the type of guy that maybe can be maybe molded into a penalty kill specialist?
Well, I think that, you know, it's one of those guys you don't get to see him play a ton. I'm in the United States now, I'm sort of confined to a lot of either word of mouth or watching games on, you know, the junior game of the week and that kind of thing. So you only see him in small little stretches. But,
right, full junior tournament too.
Stuff like that, exactly. But, you know, he moves fairly well. I mean, the problem is I see that Cormier maybe not being an effective penalty killer. He might be the guy that's in the penalty box a lot of times. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You mentioned Ethan Rowe before, and boy, yeah, he can kill penalties, but he's often the guy that's going to take the penalty 200 feet from his net that kills the momentum. So, I mean, really, you can't count on him as a penalty killer. So, in that regard, I'm not 100% sure if it's worth the time to invest in to make him a penalty killer. If he learns how to, you know, play within the rules, then yes. But, I mean, at this stage, because he's such a, I guess, call him a wild card, it just might not be worth the coaching staff time to do it at this stage.
Kyle, you've been high on Carl Klingberg, who you've written about on the website before. Do you see him, maybe give people a little bit of an idea of his game as well, and maybe do you see him possibly stepping into a regular role with the team starting next season?
I really do. You know, the first time I saw him, I sort of heard the name initially and just in passing, didn't really think much of it, but at that the U18s a few years back in Fargo, you know, the Swedish team was playing Canada. I mean, there are a lot of sort of pretty highly regarded players on the Canadian team. You know, Zach Cassian was one, John McFarland, a few of these other guys that everybody's kind of talking about. And then this Klingberg comes out and just comes and runs the Canadian defenseman through the end boards, shift after shift after shift. He's just giving these guys fits, and most of the guys ended up being pretty high draft picks. And this guy, they absolutely could not contain him. And it got to the point where, you know, I mean, so Sweden would dump the puck in, and these guys would be looking over the shoulder, making sure that guy's not on the ice. And so, I mean, this is playing into no stereotype, but it's really not what you think of a lot of times with the Swedish guys. I mean, I know they play tough and play in front of the net, but this guy is just a missile out there. So, again, looking back at the Thrashers over the last couple of years, there's something that's missing there. And, you know, if you want to, I guess, keep the fans entertained, I think he would certainly become a fan favorite pretty quick, just because I think the fans there can really appreciate those sort of nuances to the game. Like, he might only get you 9 or 10 goals a year, but I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years to see him challenge like Calder Buck for the lead in hits and then each other. He seemingly just loves to do it. So,
it sounds like a good aggressive back ender there. One of the guys that's going to play with Mark Scheifele is Ivan Tolleen, another Jets prospect. You know, is that a duo that we could see kind of come to Winnipeg and play together for the next number of years, or, you know, is one, you know, light years ahead of the other?
I don't see any reason why not. You know, a few years back when the Oilers broke a few rookies into the league at once, there they had them all on a line. They seemed to like to play together. I think in this year. Instance, if they're playing together in Barry, and if you want to bring them up together, I mean, it's always nice to have a couple of guys with built-in chemistry that you don't have to kind of work on during the year. So even if they're playing in a second line soft minutes role or on like a skill type of fourth line, I don't see any reason to break them up at this point, especially if they can develop that chemistry this year. You know, maybe, again, looking at that sort of gazing at the crystal ball here, it might not work, but if they can't put something together this year, I think it's always nice to bring guys up in pairs that way. And you saw what happened, you know, it used to be Nielsen and Cogliano, and they had a pretty good degree of success with the Oilers playing together. And then when they're all broken up, they've all sort of, you know, and really only Gagne is left there, and the rest of the guys have kind of gone by the wayside. So I think it just puts young guys in a comfort level, plays the guys they are familiar with and have that chemistry with, and I think it kind of eases the transition to the pro game.
Kyle, you know, you mentioned a bunch of guys. Is there one guy who's kind of a diamond in the rough who you think is somebody people aren't focused on but should be?
You know, there's a few guys that come to mind. One of them is that Eric O'Dell is really a kind of a good playmaking center there that might have kept him, you know, sneak up on some guys after a while, and sort of having a discussion in the comments as well about you know, Michael Kirkpatrick has, you know, played out in St. John's there, and I have been speaking a lot lately about, you know, is college the best choice, is major junior the best choice, and it looks like Kirkpatrick is one of those guys, that one of those late bloomers who's really put up some good stats. Of course, he was a 20-year-old last year, but you know, 82 points is still 82 points, even if it isn't, you know, the Quebec League, you still got to get out there and put up the points. So I know it's only a two-way contract, but certainly a guy to keep an eye on, just because of the fact that the Jets really don't have a lot of this high-end offensive talent in the system. And so down the road, either of these two guys, especially with that playmaking talent, is, you know, if we can come up with some shooters there, especially when you get those playmaking centers, I think they're guys that would be worthwhile to keep an eye on just to see how they develop.
Kyle Kozier, Illegal Curve scouting correspondent, thanks for joining us this evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll see more of your work this week, I assume?
Yep, I'll have something up more over here.
Excellent. So check out www.illegalcurve.com for more of Kyle's analysis. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're working hard to get George Johnson on the line.
Nation Army, Drew.
Yes, thank you, Ezzy. Going to keep interrupting me forever?
That was well played. Yeah. Seven
in perpetuity, Drew. I'm going to interrupt you.
Appreciate it.
It's like a little extra dividend that you get.
Drew, after you were away, we can just take that spot.
Yeah? I'm not so sure about that, I got to be honest. You know, congratulations on a job done when I was away. You know, that's a Seinfeld reference.
Drew, how do you like your steak? Well done?
Medium, actually.
Medium. There's a little red in there.
Medium to medium plus, generally.
Medium well, you mean? Plus.
Not quite medium well. Somewhere between medium and medium well. Somewhere
like
in there.
5-9 term plus? Are we not a privy to this kind of information?
No, it's a term I've completely made up on my own. Most servers, in fact, look at me as I'm weird when I request that.
Drew, the reason why I asked you about the steak is
Are you buying me a steak?
You know what? I think if anybody deserves to be bought a steak, it's you.
You know they say,
good friend. Your eyes start lighting up whenever you're about to insult me, Richard. So just get on with it. You know, because you got this grin on your face that develops, and there's a sparkle and a twinkle in your eye when you think of something
that's
hilarious.
Good, Drew. I was going to say, you know, they say, Drew, throw a dog a bone, right?
Well, Richie, on Friday, me and Drew's season ticket relationship to the Bombers is going to be rekindled. We missed the last two games.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll buy you a steak Friday. But quickly, though, the reason why I mentioned steak is, have you ever had a patio steak? Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Last night, I had a patio steak.
Oh, steak on a patio?
It's a type of steak, and it was actually bought at the St. Norbert Farmer's Market.
Ooh, I've never been
before. It was organic. It was an organic steak. I guess, not, to be more clear, it was basically no chemicals.
Yeah, no, we know what organic means.
Okay, you do? Okay.
Yeah, we're good on that.
It was delicious. It was
smaller.
Part of the meat is the patio cut?
It's a softer steak, but it's kind of cut into a square patio steak.
Try it.
It's delicious.
Did it taste like dirt?
No, it tasted great. I mean, a little horseradish.
You know how I like my horseradish,
Richie?
I understand your point, Richard. We're trying to get George Johnson of the Calgary Herald online and wondering why we're talking about some sort of weird steak.
Well, patio steak. You know, if anybody out there has had one, call in. I swear to God, it's a real thing.
Don't call in.
It's delicious.
I've had steak on a patio.
Maybe we can get Myers to make us a patio steak sandwich in addition to...
Oh, by the way, let's go to... No, did we miss any... We'll save the last segment.
Yeah, we'll save the...
We got some talking to do. I had a sandwich yesterday, Legal Curve sandwich yesterday. Oh, was it good?
I had one too, so I think
yesterday?
We missed each
what
other.
What time?
I got there about 2:30-ish or so. They said that you had already been in there.
1:30.
Yeah, well, we missed it.
Boy, is that sandwich good.
That's a good sandwich.
Oh, God, is it good.
Yeah. Anyways, we're still trying to get George Johnson on the line. In case you missed any of the programs so far, we've heard from Charlie Huddy, and we've heard from Chris Mason of the Winnipeg Jets. Looks like we got a thumbs up. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing very well, George. Thanks for joining us this evening.
No problem.
George, you know, pretend I'm a Calgary Flames fan and tell me why this year is going to be any different than last season was?
I wish I could, but I can't. You know, it's you look at it, and everybody around here is pinning their hopes on that, you know, that wondrous run they went on when everybody were convinced they were out of it, probably themselves included, and there was really no pressure on them to, you know, to basically perform everything. But the telling factor was the last 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, when they were in it, and we all thought they were actually going to make it, and they couldn't beat a team over 500. And to me, that's the most that was the telling piece of evidence that we saw in that last gasp run. So I wish I could tell you it's going to be different. I personally don't think it's going to be a lot different.
George, what are your thoughts on the Scott Hannon signing? He was signed by the Flames last week, 1 year, yeah. $1 million. As far as I'm concerned, great signing. Played for Team Canada at the 2004 World Cup. What do you think of that signing?
Well, I mean, they don't have a shutdown defenseman. I mean, in trading Robin Riggiero to Buffalo, they don't have a shutdown defenseman, that guy that they can stick out there, you know, against the other team's top players. And Scott Hannon is aging, and, you know, in the salary cap situation that this team finds itself in, without any wiggle room at all, about the only thing that they can do is to get an older player at a reduced price for a short term. And that's what Scott Hannon was. And under the circumstances, it's probably as good as they could have got.
George, you know, you spoke about the Riggiero, the loss of Riggiero earlier. Can you maybe talk about how big of a drop-off you think it is from Riggiero to Hannon?
Well, I don't know if it's a... If anything, it's amazing they actually managed to get older in the deal. I mean, here we thought that they were, you know, like the cast from Cocoon to begin with, and, you know, and they actually get grayer with Hannon, and, you know, with Lankow coming back now, that adds some more, you know, years to their already great stockpile. So, you know what, I think they're going to miss Riggiero. He had a bit of a bounce-back season last year after really struggling the year before. The thing with Riggiero was, if they didn't want to trade Iginla and they didn't want to trade Kiprasov, and Jay Feaster made it very clear they weren't going to do either of those things, you know, the only guy that really had market value that they could trade and you know, maybe get a pick for was Robin Riggiero. Because, I mean, he's 30. You know, he's still got a few... miles left, you know, on the old odometer, and you know what? When he gets in a surly mood, he can still open the old tunnel of death and invite people in. So, I think they'll miss him. I think they'll miss his physical presence, because right now, with the only physical guy they got on their defense, I mean, Hannon's a good player, but he's not a physical guy. The only guy with any real nastiness to him is Corey Sarich, and he's no spring chicken either.
Doesn't seem like there's very many spring chickens at all on this Flames roster.
No, there's not a lot. Ponce de Leon, Fountain of Youth stuff going on here right about now.
Despite that, they seem to be confident that Alex Tanguay can stay healthy for the next, you know, four or five seasons at $3.5 million a pop.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, I just think they had to sign him. I think they had to sign him because they have no one else who has anywhere close to that ability to pass the puck. Iginla smiles when he's on the ice, and we all know how much Iginla's smile means to the overall well-being of this club. So, you know, Iggins likes him, and he was really good last year, and he provides something that, I mean, they got a lot of you know, guys who can paint the barn, but they don't have too many guys that can dabble in oils. And even at his advanced age, I think that was something that they had to do. I don't know whether you had to give him the money you gave him, double what he was getting, but I think you had to retain him.
One of the guys that they were supposedly in on the running was Brad Richards. You know, how close was this team really to ever getting Brad Richards under contract?
You know, I was over in Germany covering the Women's World Cup when all this stuff was going down. So I really don't know. I talked to Joe Neuendijk the other day, just because the Minto Cup is here for the lacrosse championships, and Joe won two of them with Whitby in the 80s, and I thought he'd be a good take on it. So we were just talking a bit about it, and we all heard the rumor, as did he, that once he became a free agent, that Calgary was actually bidding more money than
than the New York was. We all heard that. I heard it over in Germany. I couldn't believe it. And I was wondering what they would do if he actually got it. I mean, what are you going to do, drop four guys out of a plane so you can fit them in under your salary cap? I don't think they ever really had a chance at him. I think it was one of those deals where they wanted to look like they were players, and we've seen this happen before here, where they wanted to look like they were in it, you know, at a time when public perception is very, very important to this team.
Joined on the line by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald.
George, last year the Flames brought in Brendan Morrison, and I actually was a fan of that signing, and he actually turned out to be, you know, a very, very useful player to this team. He'll be back this year. Did that go way too under the radar for your liking?
Well, you know, again, though, I mean, we look at it, and, you know, I just don't see where you have a team where you have Brendan Morrison and Damon Lankow at center. I mean, you got two guys with no tread left on the tire. Mm-hmm. And Brendan was really good last year. He's a wonderful guy. He's a great player. He's fantastic in the room. There's no question, you know, guys look up to him and all that kind of stuff. And he played really well last year. So you got to remember, he's coming off a broken leg at his age, and he's not even going to be able to start the season. So was it a good signing? I don't know. We get back to the point where all they seem to do is get older. And at some point, you're going to have to blow it all up and start again. And obviously they didn't want to do it this year, but, you know, again, how many old guys can you have on one team?
George, do they have to play Michael Backlund more?
I think they do, and I think they have to play him more just, again, for public perception's sake. I mean, the perception here is that they really have, you know, nobody down in Abbotsford that's going to come up and make a difference. So I think, personally, I think you got to give Backlund, you know, some leash and let him go and play him on the power play and give him some, you know, first-line minutes and see what the heck he can do. Because there's really, the cupboard outside of him is remarkably bare at this point in the next two or three years. And he's a guy you're going to be, you know, hanging your hat on because we're always, you know, on about their age and the fact that, you know, they have no prospects. Well, you've got a prospect who looks like he might be a half-decent prospect. You know, he could be a second-line center in this league. You better let him go try and prove it because, you know, people are getting a little bit tired of the old recycle thing that we seem to be getting here every year.
You spoke about, you know, the team's old up front, the team's old on the back end, George, and obviously Mika Kiprusov isn't getting any younger in net. You know, he probably might be untradeable at this point, but is he another poor season away from being completely and totally, you know, a cap albatross?
Well, I mean, at some point they're going to have to do something. I mean, he bounced back pretty well last year and played really, really, really well. I mean, you know, when he's on the top of his game, you know, he's as good as anybody in the league. But, I mean, you know, we're hitting mid-30s here on a goaltender who, until years ago, wasn't in the most pristine of shape every time he came into camp. And, you know, with those guys, the fear around here is that when the bottom drops out on Kiprusov, it's going to drop out like, you know, the bottom of a magician's trick trunk, and there's going to be nothing there. And they're going to be left with, you know, Henrik Karlsson, who may or may not even be an NHL goalie. So, you know, they're rolling dice on Kiprusov again because it's a real tough sell here to have to, you know, blow it up and start again the way they did in Edmonton. That takes a very, very brave guy to do that. And I'm not saying Jay Feaster isn't brave, but, you know, he's got to think of the people in the building. He's got the owners saying, well, you know, we gotta sell our replica jerseys and our beer and our parking and all that kind of stuff. So they almost have to have a half-decent competitive team. But in the long run, I think it's going to hurt them.
George, you mentioned Jay Feaster, and we'll let you go on this last question. What's his biggest goal to have done to this team and done to this roster by the end of the season?
Well, I think next year is their year. Next year, if you look at it, they got a lot of guys whose contracts are running out. A lot of the guys, the contracts are coming to an end on the guys. You know, your Sarich's and your and guys like that, you know, are good pros, but they're older players. So I think what they're trying to do is tread water till next year and then try and revitalize the whole thing, hoping they can, you know, be in the mix 8 to, 8-11 this year, hopefully 8, hopefully not 11, and then, you know, start tinkering. Jay Feaster will be able to put at least a little bit of his signature on this team, which still has Daryl Sutter's stamp all over it.
George Johns, Calgary Herald, thank you as always for joining us on the Illegal Hockey Show.
No problem.
Take care, George. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Off-air conversation streamed on some sort of specialty channel.
Drew,
as we just had a very in-depth conversation
about the music down, first of all. What? You're talking over the music? It's a good tune. What is this, Mumford & Sons?
Are you done interrupting? Oasis.
Oh, Oasis.
Yeah. You guys are like Liam and what's the other guy's name?
No.
The two of you.
We're not. I'm. They've never had a fight over whether or not sunscreen is good for you or bad for you.
They fought about everything.
Sunscreen?
They fought about everything.
We just had a discussion about sunscreen off the air.
SPF 45 and higher. It's useless if you don't get the SPF 45.
Didn't you read the article, though, about like sunscreen actually like could be bad for you? It attracts the sun?
Are you thinking of suntan lotion?
No. Sunscreen?
No.
I didn't read that article.
Yeah.
But you have the internet?
I do have the internet.
So when you went to Myers yesterday, was there the tally up yet?
No, they had the board up. They had the board up and they had it drawn there.
I know, but
I don't think they counted our sandwiches.
What about we had three on Ezzy? We had three. There's three sold. Like I went with a friend. We were 2 and 3. I guess you were 4. I know Hustler and Lawless had sold 1, so we were up 4-1. But you know what? This is kind of comparable to the Seinfeld episode when Lloyd Braun and George go at it.
They're selling computers.
Yeah.
Well,
I just want to know why Gary Lawless is BBMing me during the day, telling me that, you know, his sandwich, he's still on about how his sandwich is better. And then he sends me a BBM picture of the Hustler and Lawless sign. If you go into Myers, there's
disgusting.
A sign. Our sign was placed on top of theirs. And then Gary Lawless, I'm at work during the day, and Gary Lawless is sending me BBMs of their sign above ours. And I'm led to believe that he asked them to change it because he was a little bit
We need a ruling from the judge on this one. I understand there might have been some nefarious means in order to get the Hustler and Lawless sign above the Illegal Curve sign. You know, what are the legalities? Have we established the legalities around bribes?
I just want... You can bribe however you want. I just want a count of the contest.
Yeah.
So there is a tally board up at Myers Deli, so you can go and you can support your favorite
and
local show.
I'm an honorable person. Yesterday when we were in there...
Mm-hmm.
The lady who was helping us, I don't know her name, but I need to find out her name. She was helping us out, and Tyler, of course,
great
was on the
there.
Show. Yeah, she said to me, you know, we can start the tally. We have sold one Hustler and Lawless one, but if you want us to give you a little head start, we can put it as 3-0. I said, no, let's be honorable. 3-1. So far today, it's 3-1 for us.
How do you know it's 3-1 today?
That's what it was yesterday, excuse me.
Oh, but did they count my sandwich from yesterday?
You haven't gone there. This is not Back to the Future.
No, I'm saying that. Do we know that if they counted yesterday's sandwiches on the tally board?
They said they were counting yesterday.
Okay, so you think that yesterday's sandwiches were counted. Well, obviously, we're going to have to give some updates on the sandwich count. I mean, that goes
without
saying.
How many did you get?
I mean, myself? I got 4. I mean, I always get 4 sandwiches. You know that.
Yesterday, actually.
One for the car, one for the apartment.
I have another proposal I would love, but you know what? We won't bring it up on there.
Okay, it's going to be an off-air proposal. Is that what it is?
Let's just say I thought, you know, my other idea, of course, one was selling who can sell more sandwiches. The other idea was an eating contest, Ezzy versus Lawless, who can eat more of their own sandwich on the air.
The only problem is, Richie, I went for a run yesterday. I'm trying to lose weight.
Well, Tyler said to me how impressed he was that you were able to eat 3 full... By the way, I am, because I ate 1 full sandwich yesterday, and I took a nap.
I was done.
I don't know.
It's a couch sandwich.
Ezzy ate 3 sandwiches.
Can we establish, similar to what Nathan's has with the hot dog eating contest at Coney Island, can we, you know, establish some type of Myers sandwich eating contest, maybe at, I don't know, Winnipeg Beach?
I mean, you can establish whatever you want. I'm not sure anybody's going to watch you eating these sandwiches without your shirt on, but, you know, maybe. Yeah.
You know, Drew, I'm on a committee.
A committee of sandwiches?
Yes.
That's a hell of a committee.
I'm on the sandwich committee.
How was your run yesterday?
You know what? I used to run
Did you make it to the end of the block?
No.
Let him finish, Drew.
I ran. I actually mapped
it
out.
He insults me all day long. I'm not allowed to throw him an insult.
I can usually run about a mile before, but I went about 0.7 miles. My goal in about 2 weeks is to get up to about a mile and a half, and then a month from now, 2 miles. I'm, you know what? At least I'm trying. I'm trying.
How are you doing on the 30 pounds by the start of the season?
I don't have a scale to weigh myself at home, but I definitely
guesses?
Probably... don't I look a little more svelte?
You do look svelte. Ezzy, did you have an asthma attack yesterday?
Yeah. It's a good thing I actually have...
You know what the best part is? He doesn't have asthma.
No, I did have asthma when I was younger.
As he's built like a truck, he gets in shape. You better watch out, Drew.
Yeah.
Oh, 30 I know
pounds.
That.
30 pounds by October 9th. Pardon me. At the end of October, 15 pounds.
Oh, you changed.
October 9th.
Oh, it's an amendment.
So you're planning on. So you figure
30 pounds in 60 days is my goal.
Okay. So
at the end of October, I want to be, you know, roughly just under 200 pounds. I'm about 227, 226 right now.
I know. We did the weigh-in. It was comical. Yeah. That's fair enough. I mean, that's a reasonable... look, it's good that you're setting goals for yourself.
And Drew, we're doing hot yoga together tomorrow. I'm pumped about that.
That's right. And the weirdest part is that we're doing it in your basement. I had no idea your basement was a hot yoga studio.
And you're actually doing it with hot mustard.
Yeah. It's a good combination. Let me tell you, some good hot mustard. You can't go wrong with that sort of thing. What do you guys say we wrap this up with some cheers and jeers? Can you think you can handle that?
Sure, Drew.
Okay, cheers and jeers, Timmy.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
You guys are pointing at each other. Which one of you wants to go for it?
I thought Ezzy was going to go first.
Okay, Ezzy, go for it.
We had Chris Mason on earlier. He's been on our show 4 times. I'm going to cheer the mask that he selected. That, you know why? Not only was it a great design, and I think he instantly has the best mask in the NHL, it just gets me excited for training camp and the season coming up. We're getting close here, and you know, seeing the mask and the fact that Chris Mason's going to be wearing that mask just gets me really pumped up. You know, he mentioned that he was in town today, and the guys are going to be coming in the coming weeks. You know, it just gets me excited. And that mask, just from a aesthetic point of view, is just really cool and bad. So I'm going to cheer the mask.
Very good. Richard Pollock.
Spoke about it earlier, Drew. You talked about on the top of the show, we kind of got off track, about the Jets' handling of the Rick Rippon tragedy. I thought them collectively along with the Vancouver Canucks handled it quite well, considering the circumstances and the people that showed a nice level of compassion to go along with everything else that, you know, obviously with the tragedy and awareness. And I think the public is more aware of who Rick Rippon was as a person and some of the troubles he went through, and hopefully how people can attempt to, you know, help people with those troubles and awareness like that in the future.
Well put. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to actually cheer Timu Solani. The reason I'm going to cheer Timu Solani is because he's obviously listening to this program, because apparently he just in the last 25 minutes or so blogged and set a September 16th date to announce if he's going to retire or come back.
Pretty close, Drew.
Yeah. That's not too bad, but that's pretty good. Thank you. You got to give Timu a shout out for hearing us have that conversation. Then I assume writing the blog. That's had to have been how it works, right?
Probably.
Okay. So there you go. I'm going to cheer Timu Solani. And September 16th is his is when he's going to have an answer if he's coming back or not. So you can look forward to that.
Got an incoming text here. We're not even off the air here. My dad just text messaged me. Good show. Will you pick up a 2-liter skim at Sev, please?
That's almost as good as the telephone call I got today at 4:40. Richard Pollock, Sheldon Mandel here. Do you have a few minutes?
The best thing in the world is that you guys are talking.
Our parents are our biggest fans.
Yeah.
Your dad doesn't know you're on the air tonight, Drew.
No, I'm surprised. I didn't think he did.
Or that you have a hockey show.
Oh, boy. That's it for tonight's program. A big thank you to Charlie Huddy from the Winnipeg Jets. A big thank you to Chris Mason from the Winnipeg Jets. And a big thank you to George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. We encourage you to always check out the website www.illegalcurve.com. And we're actually going to be taking a short little hiatus. I believe we're back, not confirmed, but I believe September 10th is going to be our next program, back to Saturdays. So Saturday, September 10th, you can diarize. And of course, if anything changes between now and then, we'll update you on the website and on our Twitter page. And until September 10th, for Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for Michael Remus and producer Tim, my name is Drew Mandel, and we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hockey will always be a part of Winnipeg, and no one can take the game from us.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.